to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. Cash-strapped state-run museums and monuments in Italy are looking to the private sector for help with funding. The cost of renovating and keeping the country's vast array of artworks, historic palazzi, and ancient ruins shipshape can be a burden on government funds. So more and more companies like Tod's and Fendi are having to step in to help. Here's Bob Jones with this postcard from Italy.
Steeped in art, culture, and history. Centuries ago, the Medicis and other princely patrons nurtured Renaissance masters here in Florence. But Italy is struggling with the means to maintain its vast cultural heritage. Now, state-run museums and monuments are scrambling to follow the example of private institutions in looking to the private sector for donations, collaborations, and sponsorships. Taxi drivers and concierges are being enlisted by some support groups for some museums to encourage tourists to visit the institutions. In Florence, supermarket customers raised €250,000 by opting to help the city's art instead of receiving store loyalty rewards. And in Venice, the Peggy Guggenheim collection is partnering big-name businesses, including watchmakers, grappa producers, and cologne companies. Whatever the formula, museums are increasingly looking to the private sector to survive and develop. Museum officials and other high-profile patrons of the arts, ranging from an espresso coffee mogul to a contemporary arts space funded by a tire maker, have flocked to Florence for an all-day brainstorming session this week. Lending lofty inspiration to the lively debate held in the Uffizi galleries is a fresco of Botticelli, who was just one of the many artists who enjoyed the Medici's favour. Participants have tasked themselves with eventually drafting practical proposals for Italy's culture minister, including the potential for public-private relationships. Also participating are potentially deep-pocketed benefactors, like an investment group from the United Arab Emirates. Asa bin Nasser, president of Dubai-based Al-Sakal Group of Companies, says he came to Florence to listen to the museum's proposals and for the business to consider sponsoring some restoration.
Well, I came just to see what are the possibilities, and there is a lot of things to be discussed and to be negotiated. And we have the interest in many things.
Under the leadership of Premier Matteo Renzi, who used to be mayor of this Tuscan city steeped in art, Italy's state diffidence towards associating public sector culture with the private sphere is easing. Culture Minister Dario Franceschini chaired a brainstorming session.
La vastità del nostro patrimonio, I criteri sempre più esigenti di restauro, di tutela.
The extent of our estate, the demanding criteria of restoration, of safeguarding, of maintenance, the need to adjust the system, all these things require resources. For this reason, an integrated system is needed. We've been thinking this all the time. The private resources, crowdfunding, private donations, donations by companies, sponsorship, patronages, all will integrate public funding.
But some participants at this strategy meeting are keen to highlight what they call the sponsorship approach's limits. Among them is the director of the Peggy Guggenheim Collection in Venice, whose home is an 18th-century palazzo on the Grand Canal. Since 1992, the institution has forged partnerships of at least 2 years' duration with a host of companies eager to associate their brand with the prestigious art collection. Philip Rylands, who is the collection's foundation director for Italy, maintains the era of single-sponsored events is past. But, he says, the majority of Italian museums face challenges with private enterprise.
There is a difference, for some reason, between the Peggy Guggenheim collection and the majority of Italian museums. Most of them are public, so they just don't have the kind of liberty to dedicate themselves 7 days a week to the friendship, to the needs, to the requirements of this relationship with companies.
Traditionally, culture and private enterprise do not mix in Italy. Michela Bondardo is a culture policy expert who serves on the Contemporary Arts Council of New York's MoMA.
Even now, as we know, the prejudice between money, business and culture in Italy is still very deep.
She is urging Italy's state museums to change their mentality and forge long-term alliances with corporate partners. The Uffizi Gallery's new director is Eike Schmidt, a German who is part of Franceschini's new breed of museum directors following decades of Italians only at the helm of state museums. Schmidt notes that the national culture budget cuts of the past 15 years have finally been reversed, with this year's budget up some 27% over last year's, although still skimpy at some 2 billion euros. And a 2014 law allowing 65% tax breaks for donations to help Italy's public museums, monuments and arts venues has triggered a total of nearly 120 million in donations, according to Franceschini.
Actually, with the public spending cuts of the past 15 years, indeed, which now have been reversed recently, now, in fact, the state is investing itself in culture again. But this is not enough for all the needs that countries such as Italy and Greece have. So a private donorship, patronage for restorations especially, continues to be needed.
Italy has been relying heavily on businesses, including fashion companies, a mattress manufacturer and a textile tycoon, to pay to restore prestigious monuments. Shoe and luxury goods maker Tod's is footing the bill to clean the Colosseum. Fendi sponsored the restoration of Rome's Trevi Fountain, then held a summer fashion show on transparent walkways crossing over the water. Only relatively recently have museums even been allowed to keep their own revenues. Before that, all the money went straight to the state's overall coffers. Flourishing state museums like the Uffizi contribute 20% of their revenues to a solidarity fund for smaller, lesser-known museums, often in the provinces.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
A sweat-drenched, rope-swinging workout class has become the latest fitness trend among Hollywood's health-conscious residents. Similar in style to a military boot camp, power wave battle roping is weaving its way across the United States with its long, winding ropes. Here's Wang Jing with this postcard from the United States.
It's the hardcore fitness trend that's getting Hollywood residents in a sweat. Power wave battle roping sees fitness fans using anchored 22 to 40 pound ropes, whipping, slamming, banging, and thrusting them across the gym floor. This combined with a dose of loud, pumping music to produce a unique sweat-drenched workout. Organizers say it uses all the major muscle groups. Muscular and cardiovascular endurance plus flexibility is improved over time. Here at Crunch Fitness Center in Burbank, twice a week classes consist of around 20 to 30 students. Both good posture and coordination are a must. Mike Anderson is a fitness instructor.
Power wave battle rope is a very explosive workout, but also at the same time, it's really low impact on your joints. So a lot of times people find themselves in the gym lifting really heavy, heavy weights and not actually getting the results they want because they injure themselves, because their bodies aren't ready to actually lift those heavier weights. So what power wave battle rope does is it takes the pounding off your joints. So you actually will last longer. You will preserve your body longer. So any age range can do power wave battle ropes, from young children that are playing sports, on up to your elderly senior citizens.
Classes are divided into four groups. While one group tucks and pulls on the ropes, The other three perform squat curls, shoulder presses, crunches, and planks. All done for around 30 seconds. Then the groups shift places. Classes last around 1 hour.
What the Power Wave Battle Rope does is move your body in natural human movement, which a lot of different exercises, a lot of different movements that you can see in the gym, see people doing really fancy moves, and it's not natural for the body to move in those motions. This is human movement, natural human movement. So the arms move in a natural way. The arms are moving in a natural way in every movement. Your entire body is never in a contorted posture. So your chances of injuring yourself drastically go down.
Mason Trueblood is a 25-year-old actor from Los Angeles.
It's a great cardio workout. In 45 minutes, like, your entire body is worked out in a way that I don't get most other cardio exercises. So I feel like I've worked pretty much every muscle group, every main muscle group that you would want to work on.
Elizabeth Escobar is a 39-year-old administrative assistant from Burbank.
I feel exhausted. My adrenaline is high up. Every part of my body is shaking, my muscles. It makes me feel wonderful. I love it.
Elena Carriel is a 21-year-old vet technician from Sunland.
You just feel like all the stress that you have from work, from family problems, like, you just let it all out. It works out your upper arms, cardio, everything helps out perfectly, and you just feel great with it.
Justin Ray is a 28-year-old actor from Toluca Lake.
I typically don't like working out. I do it for the sake of staying in shape, but this class is enjoyable because the music's pumping and the instructor's very energetic, and it keeps the class moving, and the camaraderie with everyone taking it together helps you get motivated to keep going. So it is more enjoyable than working out by yourself.
Dr. Arash Barelyani is a director of the Beverly Hills Institute for Cardiology and Preventative Medicine. He says power wave battle roping is a tough class, similar in style to a military boot camp, but it's unique in that it combines both cardiovascular and strength training.
It's really important that people know that it's not just enough to do cardio. You have to combine your cardio exercises with strength training. The unique part of this exercise is that it combines both strength training and cardio together in a short period of time. Another benefit of this form of exercise is that more and more we are realizing that short spurts of exercise is better than low-grade, longer exercise.
Borelliani advises potential class members to ensure they are in good health before taking part. Class members should precondition their body first by warming up on a treadmill. He says a recent study published in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research showed a 10-minute roping session raised a person's heart rate and releases energy, increasing cardiorespiratory fitness.
Recent studies suggest that short spurts of high-grade exercise is more beneficial than long-term low-grade exercise. One of the reasons being that your body secretes more growth hormone during those short spurts of exercise and reduces the amount of cortisol that's produced. With long-term exercise, you do produce growth hormone, but you also start producing cortisol, which is a hormone that we don't like.
Cortisol, also known as the strength hormone, influences and regulates changes that happen in the body in response to stress.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. The European Space Agency is opening a state-of-the-art laboratory which will test how 3D printing can help astronauts explore the galaxy in future space missions. Here's Victor Ning with this postcard from the UK.
Experts say 3D printing could be a game changer for future space travelers, and researchers are already busy testing the next generation of 3D printing. Here at the European Center for Space Applications and Telecommunications in Didcot, some 80 kilometers west of London, the European Space Agency is opening a new laboratory which will be used to examine how 3D printers can aid future space exploration. At the Advanced Manufacturing Laboratory, they'll also assess new material processes and joining techniques for applications in space. There's lots of testing to be done given the high temperatures and gravitational forces of being propelled into space. Franco Ongaro is the ESA's Director of Technology.
Spacecrafts are very strange animals. They go out there and they stay out and they have to leave for 10 or 15 years and you can't call them back and fix them. So you have to be very careful about what you put in it. On the other hand, the promise is enormous. You can make very complicated parts without one screw. You make them all by themselves. And this is an enormous advantage in terms of time, in terms of mass, in terms of ability to do things that we could only dream of.
The new lab has access to this metal-based 3D printer, which is capable of producing complex metallic structures. There is also a suite of microscopes, an X-ray CT machine, and a range of furnaces. Mechanical testing, such as micro-hardness testing, is also performed. Ongaro says 3D printing presents an exciting prospect, but there is still much to learn.
It's both extremely exciting and, to a certain extent, maddening. It's a little bit like your... your kitchen. Your new ceramic knife. It cuts wonderfully, but if it falls to the ground, it falls to pieces, and you don't know how to sharpen it, you can't sharpen it.
3D printers follow the shape of a computer-designed model and apply melted wire feedstock to build a metal object layer by layer. Experts say this is advantageous in comparison to traditional construction methods, particularly because of the lack of waste. Chris Motlow is the director of the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory.
It's possible nowadays for somebody to design something that you can't make or put together, because if you're trying to remove some material from somewhere, you have to physically be able to get the tool to the place you want to remove the material. That's not always possible. So what we can do with additive manufacturing is make things that physically aren't possible.
The orbiting International Space Station is already furnished with a 3D printer which can create plastic items. In the short term, the ESA is aiming to use the technology to produce certain engine parts for rocket launchers. Apart from making it easier and cheaper to construct rockets or spacecraft, the ESA believes 3D printing may one day even help build habitable structures on other planets or moons. Jan Varner is the Director General of the ESA.
If you go to another planet or moon, in the past we took all our stuff with us, but there is stuff over there. We have soil on moon, we have soil on Mars, so therefore 3D printing might be also in the future be used to create structures on the Mars, or on the moon.
One futuristic idea is to use the moon's own natural resources to build and sustain a lunar base. Roaming rovers could use ice, metals, and minerals to 3D print a structure or building. A rover would land on the surface, inflate a dome, and then begin constructing a building to protect it and the astronauts inside.
We could use regoliths on the moon to actually 3D print blocks that we could use to build an habitat on the moon. So there's... It's more than the sky is the limit. It's the universe is the limit.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Plants are mimicking and responding to human interaction at a pop-up walk-through experience in London's busy Soho district. Leighton is claimed to be the world's first bioresponsive garden where plants can thrive in an urban setting. Here's Zhao Jianfu with this postcard from the UK.
Gardeners may often groan about weeds taking over. but this goes one step further. At Leiden, which is claimed to be the world's first bioresponsive garden, visitors are interacting with the shrubbery and getting to know nature like never before. It's a walk-through experience in which vines, palms, and trees physically move in response to visitors and their body movements. The nature-themed pop-up screen mirror uses motion sensors, an LED curtain, and 18 movement mechanisms to seemingly thrust life into these hanging plants. It's all the work of London-based design and culinary studio Bompas & Par, who teamed up with French champagne producer Pierre Rouet to create a calm sanctuary. The idea is to create a blissful but inspiring garden in the heart of the city. Sam Bompas is the director of Bompas & Par.
We all know that plants move. They respond in those nature programs with clever camera photography. They respond to all sorts of stimuluses, from the sun changing to the diurnal cycle. And what we wanted to do, though, was speed that up to make it more meaningful for humans and actually make the plants move at a human speed.
As people enter Leiden, they are met by a wall of green vines which move as they pass through. Inside is a virtual garden of Eden that tickles all the senses, including taste, thanks to bottles of champagne from Pierre Rouet. Hamish Miller is the marketing manager of Pierre Rouet.
Each of the elements of the garden, the three key focal points, actually responds and reacts to your movement. So as you pass through the entry in the tunnel, you can see the garden makes way for you to welcome you into the space. You then approach the green mirror, where you can see the garden then reacts to your body as you move forward and further away. It's exploring you, it's trying to understand who you are as you understand who it is as well. And then finally, the other big pillar of the garden is the dancing tree, which reacts to you as you move from left to right.
This dancing tree uses an industrial rotary cable and motion detectors to seemingly mimic a visitor's movement. As they sway back and forth, so does the tree.
Do you remember those dancing desk toy sunflower plants you had in the 90s? What we wanted to do is see if we could actually do that in real life with real plants.
To create this garden, Bompas & Par experimented with a variety of microelectric sensors and delicate exoskeletons to physically animate the plant life. The science fiction style Soundscape also responds to visitors' movements. This project is the second in which Bompas & Par and Pierre Rouet have collaborated in the botanical experience. Bompas says they hope to experiment in this space again.
For me, there's been a lot of innovation in the world of plants with creating new varietals, creating ever more exotic and wondrous things to eat and drink. But I think there's a lot more that can be done in the world of floristry and plants for aesthetics. What we're hoping is this forms part of an ongoing project to really see how we can push the realms of floristry and the natural world, ultimately to give people amazing experiences.
With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated. And you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.